Take Charge of Your Money with myself, Brendan Dale. Conversations on all things personal finance, from budgeting, saving, investing, insurance, financial planning, debt, life goals, and more. Visit takechargeofyourmoney.blog for more content. Welcome to Season 2, which is all about insurance, the various types of insurance you get, how they work, and why you need it. And on that, a special thanks to my sponsor for making this podcast possible. Not a fan of phone calls? With Naked, you can switch your car insurance in under 90 seconds without having to talk to anyone. Get a final quote online, and if you like the price, which you probably will, you can sign up instantly. Visit naked.insure to find out how Naked is making insurance quicker and easier than ever before. Naked, the new way to cover your stuff. Naked Financial Technology is an authorized FSP, and you can see the link in the podcast notes below. Medical aid and gap cover and how these two products work. And with me, I've got a very interesting guest, and I've actually been looking forward to speaking to you. It's Elmo Lubowski. I see you're a qualified lawyer and also a qualified financial planner, although you don't practice. I'm not sure if you're a practicing lawyer either at the moment. You can share now. But on your website, you mentioned that you're a strategist, a writer, a coach, and a speaker. That's quite a lot. Maybe you could give us a little bit of a background of who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so I'm correctly stated. I'm Elmo Lubowski. I am a qualified lawyer. I also qualified as a certified financial planner, a CFP professional, a couple of years back. And I've been a financial advisor, but at this point in time, I'm more involved with sort of financial coaching. So I do help people and chat to them on a purely counseling coaching basis. So I do not advise on any products. I do not give financial advice. In fact, the FSP, the financial services provider license I had, I no longer run. And then I am quite involved in regulatory matters in digital assets now, which is one of the reasons I also moved out of the traditional financial advice space to get into the digital asset space. And I help a company with regulatory side, although there isn't really much regulation around that, but that's a potential topic for another day. But yeah, that's basically what I do.
Cool, that sounds very interesting. And yes, I probably need you back one day about the regulation on digital assets. That sounds quite interesting. So with medical aid, personally, I found it quite expensive, and I think it's a bit of a luxury item, especially for the average South African. I think if you're employed at a corporate, you have medical aid as one of the benefits, but lots of just sort of ordinary folk don't have it because they don't really see the value. And also there's something we'll get to just now is just about when it comes to payouts that they don't always, there's a misconception, I think, about what the medical aid will actually pay out. Before we get to those nitty-gritties though, kind of just in general, what is medical aid?
So, I mean, medical aid, I mean, I think first off, we need to understand that, I mean, one of the reasons we pay taxes is to get some kind of medical assistance from our governments. And I think one of the reasons medical aids in this country are such a big topic is also because I think our basic healthcare sometimes is lacking. Medical aid mainly is to cover your basic primary healthcare needs. So do you need to go to a doctor? Do you have any medical conditions yourself that you need treatment for? Do you have a family that has certain conditions that you need? And that's your primary healthcare, going to a GP, going to different doctors. And then there's the part around providing for if you need in-hospital care. So do you need any kind of operations? And then obviously emergency medical healthcare as well. So medical aids generally are trying to create products that cover a variety of those things, primary healthcare, in-hospital healthcare, other medical needs, medication. So people are covering themselves where I think some people want to cover, they don't want to be reliant at all on what government does provide in terms of clinics on a primary healthcare basis and in terms of hospitalization from a government hospital's perspective. So they want to cover all of those. And then it just depends on what you need for yourself and what package you're going to choose. And that's why there are so many choices out there for medical aids.
Okay, cool. Now, just you've mentioned lots of things. I guess the one question I've got is each medical aid is going to have so many different plans, and on the plans, even sometimes they have variations of this. Do you think they're purposely overcomplicated, or are we as consumers just not really educated?
Look, I think unfortunately a lot of products are still complicated for various reasons. And maybe part of that is to provide for intermediation. So to make it the area of a intermediary like a broker or an advisor that you have to get advice around these products in order to take them. And I think that is... I do believe that that products, generally financial products, so not necessarily medical aid specifically, but they came from that philosophy, so that you also provide work for an intermediary to be able to actually do that. But I don't think necessarily companies are trying to overcomplicate them. I think it's, if we give them the benefit of the doubt, I think they're trying to provide options. So they're trying to provide an option for you. And as I mentioned, depending on your need, do you want more savings for primary healthcare, or do you just want to cover the hospitalization needs that you might have in the event of needing operations or emergency medical treatment?
Okay. And on medical aid plans, we've got this thing called prescribed minimum benefits, which, if I understand right, it's a set of benefits that all medical aid schemes offer all members. Is that about correct?
Yeah, so the Medical Schemes Act, which is what all medical schemes need to act under, and in terms of that act, there are a defined set of benefits that ensure that all medical scheme members have access to certain minimum health services, regardless of the benefit option. So as we discussed, you get all these different options on medical aids, but the Medical Schemes Act has said you need to provide these for everyone, no matter what plan they're on. And there's about 271 medical conditions, and that's on the website, medicalschemes.co.za, which is the regulator for medical schemes, and 26 chronic conditions. And those have to be covered, meaning you need to get medication for those. Any related needs you have in terms of those conditions have to be covered, no matter what medical aid you're on.
Okay. Cool, thanks. You also mentioned a bit earlier that some plans you can have a savings account option. My understanding is that it's you're contributing your money as though you're putting this in the bank. You know, it's like your savings account, but you're not necessarily earning any interest on it. And perhaps sometimes you even pay fees to have that facility. But, you know, is it worth having that? And what are the benefits of that?
Okay, so, I mean, I think a disclaimer that I maybe needed to also give in the beginning, which I'll give now, is that also this shouldn't be construed as advice. And it's a lot of this is my own understanding as well, and with the experience I've had with medical aid as an advisor and also using them. So when I discussed the or mentioned the basic healthcare needs, like going to a doctor, you're sick, you need to go to a GP, you need to have something checked, you need to go to an ear, nose, throat, an ENT specialist, all of these daily things, and medication, for instance, that you might need, are basic healthcare needs. Now, usually, and I don't want to go into too much detail and complicate it, but simply most products these days are a combination of hospital care, so getting operations and emergency procedures in hospital, and a savings plan. So the hospital plan essentially covers everything that you need in hospital. So a pre-booked operation that you may need, and the medical aid approves it, and you go in hospital, and you need to actually be at least one night in hospital. That is in hospital care, and that is covered by a hospital plan. Now, you'll get different levels of that, and we'll still discuss that around what's covered, specialists, and where gap cover comes in for that. Savings are your daily basic healthcare needs, usually come out of your savings. And as you correctly stated, it's essentially your own money. Because what you'll see when you're paying for a medical aid usually, and you have a savings plan, those are separate amounts. So, well, they're not separate. You get charged one premium, but there's a separation between your hospital benefits and what is your savings. The only real benefit that you get from a savings portion of your medical aid is that it's allocated to you at the beginning of the year. So statistically, and I don't have exact numbers necessarily, but you'll find that a lot of people get basic health care and things that would normally be paid out of their savings by their medical aid in January. Because January, your savings portion renews and you get it allocated to you, let's call it 10,000 Rand. And you get that allocated to you in the beginning of the year. And now suddenly you need, you know, your kids get sick, your partner gets sick, you get sick, and you need to use 10,000 Rand for all kinds of specialists, and nothing is in hospital yet. You're just spending money on out care needs, and you can use it. What will then happen is that you're being charged monthly for your medical aid, and you're then paying that off.
So, yeah, so it's like credit.
It's almost like a bit of credit to a degree, yeah. So if from a planning perspective and from a money management perspective, you can obviously make your own provision for this. And you could potentially put that into a savings or an investment that is maybe not very risky, and apportion your own savings plan to account for some medical expenses, and then get yourself purely a hospital plan. So, and I'll talk just from personally, I have got a very basic hospital plan. And it's even a plan which has limited choice in terms of your hospitals that you can go to. So what I've done is looked at the hospitals on a certain plan and said, okay, that hospital is just down the road from me. So when I need a procedure, I'm happy with that hospital. And I don't want to go to another hospital that I like more. And you can get a cheaper hospital plan for that. And then you've got some of your basics covered. You've got a hospital plan, and I make my own provision for savings. So I don't go and I don't get a savings portion because I've provided for myself to have enough money for medical needs on a day-to-day basis, so primary healthcare needs.
Thanks for that info. Then something where people get caught out, and I say caught out in sort of air quotes there because some people know about it, some don't quite understand it, but if you actually need a procedure or an operation and you're going to a specialist, you get a bit of a shock when you see the bill from the specialist and then you see what the medical aid is actually going to pay. Sometimes they only pay a third or even less, and you're now left with this difference. How does that work?
That is definitely an interesting one and something people need to watch out for. And I've got a couple of tips that I might be able to give. And that's also, again, from personal experience, not just with myself, but with people around me. A medical aid has what they call their medical aid rates. Now, there used to be a standardization of those. I think more with the older traditional type medical aids, there was a standard for an amount for what a doctor or a specialist could charge for certain procedures with a code. My understanding of it now is that each medical aid has their rate that they are willing to pay for a procedure and for a particular specialist that you may need. And then it also depends on the plan that you're on. And like your basic plans usually say, we're willing to pay 100% of the rate that we believe is the right rate for that procedure and that specialist. However, the specialist comes along and says, this is my rate. I'm a professional. I feel I'm good at what I do. And I'm going to charge what my rate is, could be up to 800% of what of the medical aid that you're on is willing to pay. Mm-hmm. So as an example, and this is an experience that I had when one of my children was born, is that I was in a basic hospital plan. The medical aid was willing to pay X, but the specialist was charging a higher amount. And the medical aid was only willing to pay the lower amount that they were willing to pay on that. And they had disclosed in the fine print that that is what they were willing to pay for that specific procedure and specialist. And here's the tip. I think, let me mention the tip. The tip is, this is actually also very negotiable with the specialist that you use. So you can actually talk to the specialist, and this is obviously provided you have the time and you have the understanding of it. For instance, the gynecologist that we were using specifically asked us what medical aid option we were on and agreed with us that he was going to charge, he was happy to charge that rate so that we wouldn't be out of pocket. He then mentioned that the specialist that he may use, i.e. the anesthetist, would usually go with that decision he has made. But he does advise that we also check with the specialist. And here's an interesting thing that happened, just a personal story. It was in a more of a bit of an emergency situation where my wife was going to do natural, ended up having an epidural and needed the anesthetist to come in. That eventually turned into having a, I can't remember what the name is, that they top it up, where she then, the epidural didn't really work and she had to get topped up in order to have the seizure. And that was seen as an, it was seen as an emergency seizure. So the specialist charged an emergency type rate. We didn't really, understandably, in that situation, my first child is being born and there's no time to negotiate these rates. And, you know, eventually when it came to paying everything, it now came out that Discovery was willing to pay X and the specialist was charging another amount. I then simply, in a very nice way, approached the specialist and said, I'm also a professional. I discuss my fees with the client beforehand. We agree on that, and that is how I go about my work. I know it might be a little bit different for doctors, but ultimately we never agreed to this. And referred her back to what our the gynecologist had said, and said that the specialist he usually gets in, because he hires her, we didn't necessarily get a choice. He brought in someone he likes to work with and mentioned all of the discussion that we had at that point, and she eventually then accepted the amount that the medical aid would pay. So it is possible to discuss these things. With my second child's birth, I actually made a joke as we went in, because this time it wasn't such a hectic situation. My wife was actually waiting for natural birth or the birth process to start, and we then went in for the caesar. So it was a little bit more planned, but not quite. And I then joked to him and I said, remember what medical aid I'm on? We use the same gynecologist and obstetrician, I think it is, that actually delivers the baby. And I just point, and there was another anesthetist, and I said, this is the medical aid I'm on. You better be charging at that rate. And he said, no, cool, don't worry about it.
That's and awesome.
Everything That's, was covered.
Yeah, very, very useful tip. But now, if it wasn't covered, well, I mean, if they charge the higher rate, then that's where gap cover now comes in, which is a completely separate product, a whole new product, which is now going to pay essentially the difference between what the specialist is charging and what the medical aid is going to charge, I mean, pay.
Absolutely correct. Yeah, that's where the gap cover industry created products around that. So you're on Plan X. Their rate is... and as I said, it's you on a plan that says 100% of their rate, but whatever their rate is, that specialist is charging 200, 300, 400, 500, as I mentioned, up to 800% of that rate that your medical aid plan is willing to pay. And gap cover is supposed to cover most of that shortfall.
Yeah, no, interesting. And then just to clarify, your gap cover... I think there's a misconception that gap cover covers everything that your medical aid isn't covering, but it's they're only going to cover actual things that your medical aid would have covered in hospital, as far as I'm aware, and then it's the difference there. It's not just anything else that you suddenly need. It's quite
specific. It's definitely not for the primary healthcare I mentioned, so any GP or things such as that. So often... you do find that even with your savings, and this is where some of the inflexibility sometimes comes in with savings as well, and why you should also highly consider your own savings for primary healthcare. Sometimes the medical aid is actually saying they're only willing to pay out of your savings for this doctor X amount. So they're also prescribing that they don't really want to pay a certain amount over and above. That isn't covered by gap cover. It's in hospital, as you mentioned. It's in hospital procedures.
Can one easily swap medical aid providers? You know, can I chop and change?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. So what they are allowed to do when you change a medical aid provider is they are allowed to, and this again, you can check with them up front, is they are allowed to implement certain waiting periods, you moving from one to the other, especially with certain, if you maybe are on certain chronic medication, even prescribed minimum benefits that they're supposed to provide, they could, for instance, implement some waiting periods if you move medical aid providers. In terms of staying with the same medical aid provider and changing options, it's usually quite easy to change to a higher option, which you're going to pay more for at any point. But to move down in terms of a benefit option, you can only do that once a year before December. And that's obviously because if you've been on a higher option, you may have used a lot of those benefits, and moving down in premium during the year is not going to cover the scheme for all the procedures that you've done. Vice versa, if you're moving to a higher option, there's less of a problem because you're now contributing more. So moving down is only once a year. That's usually around December. So people that do have intermediaries, for medical aid intermediaries or brokers, often those brokers should ideally contact them in around October, November, saying, please consider if you want to move at this stage. It's also the time of year when people move up a medical aid, and maybe they want to move up, but that you can do during the year. But it's often also considering moving something that's a little bit lower. Anything that's considered a bit of a lower option, you can then only do at that time of the year.
Cool, interesting. So thank you very, very much for your time and your insights. Any final thoughts, though, on medical aid? Any final tips or anything?
Yeah, I do think it would be advisable for people, if they are looking into it, to get some guidance around it, especially from a specialized medical aid broker that understands different options. And you're not going to pay more, at least from a premium point of view. That's the one thing. And I think generally what I wanted to say, and I know we're talking about medical aid, but I just wanted to make a small distinction, which I'm quite passionate about for people and consumers to understand. The difference between what I would call an intermediary or a broker versus a financial advisor versus a financial planner. And very simply, the difference between those three is that a broker is often tied to a specific insurance or a company, and they may actually be independent as well, but they are advising or they are intermediating, say, two or three different companies. And that's the first part. So that's the commission part. A financial advisor advises you around the different product options, but it's still specific to products. So they're not just, so usually an advisor and broker go together in that they're actually just intermediating the product. And sometimes they give you advice around the product or products. A financial planner should be very independent of the product offering. And planning goes to just understanding what your situation is, your needs, your goals, and how you're going to achieve that from an investment and savings point of view, from a risk point of view, in getting risk cover, life insurance, short-term insurance, whatever. But it's not related to the product. It's more related to understanding your plan as an individual.
Cool. Thank you. Alma, thank you so much, though, for this chat. It's been very interesting, and you've obviously got a lot of experience in this field. So, yeah, I think it was some very useful info there.
Great. Yeah, I hope it was understandable enough for people to get a good idea of especially medical aids and what they should be looking out for and doing.
So just as a reminder, this episode, and in fact the whole season, is sponsored by Naked. That's naked.insure, and I'm going to put the link down in the description below. So please check them out.